Hey, this is Kaylee Moore.
And this is Paul Jarvis.
Welcome to the Creative Class Podcast.
A podcast for freelancers.
Woohoo!
Yay!
Check out Zoho Social, the all-in-one social media management platform for freelancers.
Save time scheduling your content and reach the right audience at the best time. Zoho Social is from Zoho.com, a suite of more than 45 products trusted by more than 35 million users.
There's an exclusive 60-day free trial offer for Creative Class listeners. Sign up today on GoZohoSocial.com.
So Joanne Lippman from the book, that's what she said. One of my favorite quotes from that book is, "Who would want to be operated on by a surgeonette?"
Probably no one. That is so silly to me. And I feel like that just kind of kicks off this episode where we're going to revisit female freelancing, which is a great episode from a past season if you haven't already listened to that. Let's kind of revisit that and see how things are going now. I know that there's some new research that has come out since we last talked about this. So I want to kind of look at the numbers and just go over maybe what's changed or what we're still hoping will change in regard to being a woman working in the world of freelancing. So yeah, what are your thoughts? What's your perspective so far? I know that you've done a lot of reading about this since we last talked.
I have, because I think this topic is really interesting, because I think the more research I do about anything in business, the more I see that the science and the data seldom actually line up to how things work in business, which is frustrating. So, I mean, we can get into a bit of the numbers and then kind of talk it out from there. But it just seems like all of the research shows that when women are paid attention to, just the same as dudes are, and are brought into higher paying work and higher levels of work. I don't know how to talk about that because I don't work in the corporate world. But like, I think that the issue is that a lot of people think that it's, well, hopefully not a lot of people, but it's kind of treated like a zero-sum game. Like, oh, if women are paid as much as men, then men will make less. And I don't think that's the case.
No, I don't think so.
I just think that if people are paid the same amount, regardless of their gender or their race or anything else, then it seems like a win. It doesn't seem like gender equality in work is a zero-sum game. But let's talk a little bit about some research and then get into our feels on the subject. So Bonsai did some research and found that female freelancers are paid late 31% of the time and their male counterparts had to wait for payment just 24% of the time.
I also saw a HoneyBook study that said that female freelancers are paid less than a third than men overall. So in general, women earn about 81% of what men earn, especially in creative fields. And women make only 62% of what their male counterparts earn across the board. So that, I think, is pretty illustrative of a gap that's still very real and still very much a problem. And I think that this is particularly interesting to the people who are probably listening right now working in creative fields. And maybe this is something they have dealt with firsthand, is that there's definitely a discrepancy between what male and female freelancers earn. And maybe even what they quote or ask for on projects. I think that that might be part of the equation there too. So, I mean, what's your thoughts on that? I think that this is something we've talked about in the Slack channel before, but what's your perspective on this from those conversations and just kind of across the board?
Yeah, I mean, other than just it sucks. So I think that there's two things happening here. One, there have been multiple studies that show that men attribute their success to like hard work and doing well, and women mostly attribute their success to luck, which I think is kind of interesting. But I think that the way that, and there's actually, this is at the end, but I want to quote it now because I think it makes sense. So Gloria Steinem said that, "I'm glad that we've begun to raise our daughters more like sons, but it'll never work until we raise our sons more like daughters." So I think even from a young age, guys and girls are raised slightly differently, which I don't think is a good thing. Men in general are taught to just have more confidence. I just think like all of these like differences in gender in terms of how we raise kids is just, I don't personally understand it. But I think that definitely for a lot of the women that I've spoken to, they have more confidence issues than men do about like asking for more or being more assertive. And I don't know how to fix that, but I definitely see that from conversations that I've had.
Yeah. And I know that when we kind of touched on this topic over the summer, one of the things that came up in the Slack group was that women don't always feel as confident, or they second guess themselves, or they find themselves quoting lower rates than their male counterparts because they just don't feel as confident in those situations. They don't feel that they have the processes or the expertise. They really just kind of tend to second guess what they're asking for. And so one of the things I love about Creative Class is that there's a whole section on building confidence and getting good processes in place and really just kind of having your shit together so that when you go to a client, you have all of your ducks in a row, you're very polished, you're very professional, and you can go into those situations knowing that what you're asking for is what you're worth because you have a process. You're very good at the creative thing that you do. You have steps for how you execute a project from start to finish. And I think having those pieces in place, they don't fix the problem, but they're definitely helpful at making men and women feel better about going into those situations and feeling more confident to where they can charge higher rates, they produce better results. It just kind of has a ripple effect for the whole start to finish process with working with clients.
Yeah. And I think before we move on to other things, I just want to bring up, because I just, this morning before we started recording, I read part two of an article that you wrote on language. And I think this is a good place to bring this up, because a lot of times our language kind of exposes our issues with confidence and the way that we speak. This is from the book as well, from That's What She Said, where she talks about a lot of research into the way that women, the way that they've been raised to speak is far less assertive than men. So can you talk about, I can't remember what it's called, it was part two about language, about the way that you speak.
Yeah, so it was actually about podcasting. I was reading through the transcripts and listening to the playback from a couple podcasts I had been on over the summer, and I noticed this trend of using language where I was really kind of cutting away at the ethos, and I can hear myself doing it right now. I was using words and phrases that it introduces a little bit of doubt into the things that I'm saying. So I sound less confident about what I'm saying. I sound less certain about the way I phrase things. It just adds this footing to the things that I say where I don't feel that I'm coming across as polished or as self-assured or whatever it is in the way that I'm speaking. Whereas on the page, I can do that no problem because I can edit. But when you're speaking and it's kind of flow of consciousness, we use these phrases and I keep doing it. Things like kind of, that's a negator. That cuts away. It's a detractor at your ethos and at your strength of speaking and things like that. So it's hard to be mindful of, and I'm really working on it. But things like that just naturally get introduced to our speaking patterns. And it's a problem. It's something we have to be mindful of and work on just kind of as a group.
Yeah. And I think that it's so funny because like for me, I think I'm more assertive in the way that I speak than in the way that I write. Like my copy editor is always taking out me starting sentences with I think or I guess.
Interesting.
Because he's like, you don't need to say that. This is an article that you wrote. We know that you think these things. You don't need to guess at this stuff.
I've seen a lot of conversations on Twitter too about women really overthinking the use of exclamation points and smiley faces and emotive things like that within emails. And I know that that's something I do as well, where if I use an exclamation point more than once, I'll go back and edit one of them out. So you really try to minimize those things that, I don't know, I feel like it's a female maybe writing or speaking thing, but you end up second guessing yourself and you really think about how you're coming across through an email or in a podcast interview, whatever it might be, where you really have to be careful and mindful of the things that you're saying.
Yeah, definitely. I think the other thing, and that's why I wanted to bring that up, because I like just finished reading that article before we started recording. So I was like, oh, that would probably make sense to talk about here. So I'm glad I remembered that. The other thing is that, so in the book, she was talking about how things like sensitivity training don't work and there's actually a negative effect. So the discrepancies in gender actually get worse when people go to things like sensitivity training, which I was like, this is bad because companies are trying to fix the problem with sexism and discrepancies in pay and that. And it's just getting worse when they try to do these like HR things. Because I think the problem and kind of the point of the book really was that no matter how rational we think we are, we're all captives to the hidden biases that we have. And they kind of unconsciously color all of the decisions we make, all of the things that we do. And because everybody has biases, men, women, anybody, and we're all trying to overcome them, we're kind of all in the same boat. Like we're all trying to figure this out. And I think that at least the point that I got from the book was that it's better to give people tools to recognize when they're being led by their hidden biases as opposed to what is the truth. Because it doesn't matter how many studies there are showing that adding women to teams increases output, having women as CEOs increases revenue. All of these things are great to read, but then if we have these unconscious biases that we're always kind of defaulting to, like I think as humans, we're better than that. I think as humans, we possess the ability to form our own rational thoughts. We just have to be more mindful of it. So I think the more that we can be mindful of things and question, like, why do I think that way? Mm-hmm. Why am I interrupting her and not him as often? Things like that. I think that that's really where the key lies to kind of fixing this. What do you think?
I agree. And I think that having conversations like this one are really helpful. I think it just kind of puts these topics out in the open and it starts a dialogue to where people can listen and open their minds a little bit to thinking about things differently. I think it's also important, though, for these conversations to happen between men and women where they're sharing honestly about everything from rates to how things are done. There really has to be a lot of transparency where both parties are willing to share. I mean, there's no real guidebook on how to be a good freelancer. I think Creative Class is a good starting point, but having these conversations and being candid and being willing to share with other people who are trying to figure this thing out, that helps a lot. And so when men and women especially are being candid about what they're charging for different things and how much experience they have or how to troubleshoot even and work through different problems with clients, that's helpful. And I think that that's progress in some way.
How do you manage social media without it taking up all your time? You're creating, you're curating, you're sharing great content on social media.
But how do you get the attention and reach your content deserves and engage your audience across multiple channels?
Try Zoho Social, the all-in-one social media management platform for freelancers.
Save time scheduling your content and reach the right audience at the best time. Zoho Social is from Zoho.com, a suite of more than 45 products trusted by more than 35 million users.
There's an exclusive 60-day free trial for Creative Class listeners, so sign up today at GoZohoSocial.com. Yeah, and I mean, I think that that's where transparency really helps. Like we talked about, sometimes transparency, like for income reports, can just make us feel kind of shitty about ourselves. But I think in this regard, being open and transparent is a good thing because I think that there's another study done by our friends at FreshBooks that found that 91% of women who freelance became self-employed by choice because they wanted to be freelancers instead of working for a company. 78% said they were happier working for themselves. And 96%, so basically everybody, said that they didn't want to return to traditional employment. So one, I think that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a lot of moxie to be a freelancer. So I'm very pleased that a lot of females are doing that. But it kind of shows that traditional employment is fucked. If traditional employment isn't working for 50% of the population, there are some issues there.
For sure. Definitely.
Good on you for wanting to go freelancing and wanting to kind of set your own course. But I also think like shame on traditional employment, not everybody, but definitely some of them where it's like they're not addressing these things and maybe they're not addressing them. And I had this conversation with a bunch of guys, which is like bad way to start a conversation in this podcast episode. But I had a conversation with a bunch of guys about this because I was like, why aren't we talking about this more?
Mm-hmm.
And overwhelmingly, it was that guys were like, I don't want to say the wrong thing. I don't want to be ostracized on Twitter by saying the wrong thing or talking about equality in work or women freelancers. And I think that as guys, we have to be okay with being a little bit uncomfortable,
mm-hmm.
because the other groups are uncomfortable a lot of the time. So we need to shoulder a bit of that discomfort as well by having hard conversations. And yeah, it's difficult to have these conversations. I'm probably sweating a little bit more recording this episode than some of the other ones about like picking clients. But I also think that it's worth having this dialogue because we need to both figure out why it's happening, how to like fix it, and then how to move forward where people don't feel singled out or ostracized in any way. Because it's just, I know meritocracies don't exist, but it just seems like it would be easier and cooler if everybody was kind of treated the same, paid the same, mm-hmm. respected the same, like all of those things. Obviously, there's lots of financial gains and team gains, but I just think like it would just be better as humans being human beings to each other.
I know. I feel like the other side of it, along with the conversations, along with the open dialogue, for the women out there who maybe are struggling with the confidence issue, I think there are a few really actionable steps that you can take to start getting better at this. And it's just literally just have to put these things into practice. So number one, always be firm in your processes, in your expectations, and in your client boundaries. And this isn't across the board. This isn't a blanket statement, but women oftentimes have trouble with being super accommodating. I know that's something I personally struggle with. But having firm boundaries, I think, is step one, and really sticking to those and not bending to a client's will just because they're asking for something. I think that that's a huge first step. I think the other side is don't be afraid to charge or to ask for what you're worth, and always build in regular rate increases into your business. So again, that's sometimes hard for women to do. They feel like, oh, freelancing is so great. I'm just happy I get to do this. But it is a business still, and you have to look at it that way, and you have to build those things in. And it's just another one of those hard things that you have to get comfortable with.
Yeah. And I think on the other side of the, like, being firm about your processes and expectations and that, I've talked to women about this, like my friends who are freelancers, and there's 100% a double standard, because if a guy is assertive, then he's confident. Mm-hmm. If a woman is assertive, she's a bitch.
Yep.
And that's so... question that. Like, if you're thinking that in your head, like, why you don't like somebody to be assertive, then think about why. Think about why you don't like that. Think about if that's colored by any of these hidden biases that you might have, because it's 100% a double standard there.
Definitely. I think it's important for all of us too, to just encourage other women to do these tough things, to act as a support system, to make referrals and open the door for new opportunities, especially for women. I think it's good to have a list of both men and women that you can refer for opportunities. And it's not based on your gender. It's about who's the best fit for a project. So I think it's a nice thing to do, to have maybe a spreadsheet or a short list of people who are like your go-to people for different types of work. If somebody comes to you and you can connect the dots and get the person to the right connection or the right specialist, it's good to have a list that's pretty, I would say, pretty equally balanced. If you have a woman on that list for a certain type of work, also have a man, and vice versa.
And if your list, if you're like, well, I don't know any women that do this, then maybe network a little bit more.
Yeah,
and because there are definitely some. Because I've heard so many times from people like, oh, well, I don't know any women programmers. And like, have you looked, bro?
Yeah,
like,
same for speakers. Same for speakers at conferences too. I know that a lot of the time, it's pretty male heavy on the speaker agenda. And there are a lot of really smart women out there who would love to get more speaking opportunities. So if somebody asks you on Twitter, for example, do you know any good speakers for X conference? Make sure that you have women on your list. Like, I know there's even a list out there of women who are looking for speaking opportunities. So ask for those resources. And that's something we can put in the show notes too, if somebody's looking for something like that.
Totally. I think the other thing that kind of goes with the, thinking about like how you view women versus men in assertiveness, I think paying attention to interrupting, because that was a big thing in the book, is that men interrupt women way more than they interrupt other men. And even in the book, it talked about even female Supreme Court justices. I know this is kind of a sore point right now for America, but
it is timely. Yeah.
Even Supreme Court justices who are female were interrupted 3 times more frequently than male. For me, because I'm super confrontational, I would just call that shit out. But that doesn't always make sense when you're working in a team, because you don't want people to feel confrontational, because then I don't know if they're going to change. Like, I don't know if confrontation like that helps to change views. It may just entrench that view, which is the opposite of what you want to happen. But somebody that is less confrontational than me, Adam Grant, who's a Wharton professor, has made it a practice to intervene when he hears something that's interruptive or belittling or offensive to women. So sometimes he will simply ask a quiet, gentle question. What do you mean by that? Or why are you doing that? And it's a non-confrontational approach that often jars men into reflecting on why they said that and kind of questioning those hidden biases and allowing them to come to their own realization. It sounds like such a shrink move, like letting people come to their own realization about their behavior that you want them to come to, as opposed to just being like super confrontational about it. And I mean, I think it also depends on the situation, because if somebody was being like a mega jerk to somebody, I'd be okay with confrontation. But if it was just like, they don't even know they're doing that, so maybe you can call it out in a way that they think about why they're doing that, and then they actually change instead of becoming more entrenched in that view.
Yeah, I love that. In my past life, when I worked full-time, I also worked as the PR person at a nonprofit, and we had a female executive director. And I always liked that in meetings, if a man was trying to interrupt another woman on the team or speak over another woman, she would just pause and she would say something like, excuse me, and she would stop the conversation. And then the man would be like, oh, wow, I just interrupted. And I, like you said, I didn't even realize I was doing it. And so, yeah, I definitely think there are tactics to overcoming or to at least illuminating those situations where it's like, hey, that's not appropriate, or don't do that. And it doesn't have to be super confrontational.
Well, what else do you want to add as we wrap up this super good episode? I'm super pleased with this so far.
I think this is a good conversation. I don't know that I have a whole lot more to add. I would just really encourage people to, like I said, open the door for women for different opportunities. I don't think there's always an equal playing field, especially for things like speaking, for things like leading conversations or education. There are a lot of really strong female voices out there that could have more of a spotlight than they currently have. So in the next year or the next however many months, I would love to see, even if it's just on Twitter, more people lifting up smart women and connecting them and introducing them, because we could definitely use more of that.
Yeah, and I think that that just kind of levels the playing field. It doesn't mean men are going to have less for women to have more. It just means that we're going to share more equally.
Yes, I love that.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the podcast.
If you enjoyed it, please take a second to leave a review over on iTunes.
And be sure to check out our course, The Creative Class.
You can find it at creativeclass.co, which is creativeclass.co.